The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, you've met Donald McCrae here on the programme previously. The last time was about 4 years ago. He told us about his remarkable book, A Man's World, The Double Life of Emile Griffith. But he has a new book set in Ireland, In Sunshine or in Shadow, How Boxing Bought Hope in the Troubles. Donald McCrae, thank you very much for joining us. I should have said, you are one of the finest sports writers in the English language. 2 William Hill Sportsbook of the Year Awards, 3-time Sports Interviewer of the Year. What attracted you to the story of boxing and the troubles in Belfast?
Well, you know, I lived in South Africa as a young boy until my early 20s. And at that time, we heard nothing about Nelson Mandela. He was in jail, but the government obviously did not want us to hear about Nelson Mandela. But we heard an enormous amount about what was happening in Northern Ireland. So when Bobby Sands and 9 other Republican prisoners starved themselves to death, that sort of dominated our airwaves. So I think I was kind of had always an awareness of what was happening in Northern Ireland.
Sorry, from what perspective in South Africa were you hearing it? Were you hearing it very much from the unionist viewpoint or Republican viewpoint?
You would assume the unionist side, but clearly it was actually quite balanced. We were just being told what was happening. And I think it was the government's way of deflecting attention from apartheid and also maybe to make us think, well, actually, we're not so messed up. There are other complicated places in the world. So, yeah, it's unusual that they allowed such blanket coverage of it.
And that piqued your interest.
It did. And also, I'm obviously a huge boxing fan, and I knew that...
Yeah, because how many books have you written that have involved boxing at this stage?
Well, 12 books, and 4 of them, including this one, have a boxing base. And after I did my second one, I said, well, I'm not going to do any more sports books, and especially boxing. And I went about 10 years without touching boxing again as a subject for a book. And then I thought that's kind of daft because obviously you mentioned Emile Griffith, which is ostensibly about boxing, but it's more about a gay man in the early 1960s, black world champion, and the battles he faced. So about much more human issues.
Yes.
And this one, although boxing is at the heart of the book, it's much more about how the people in boxing used their activities as fighters to spread peace and reconciliation.
Which is very interesting because I was thinking about this today, that there are certain sports in the 1980s in particular was extraordinary. The Irish rugby team would have had a mix of players from Ulster, which was very, very important at very difficult times. And of course, also back in the bombings of the 1970s as well. The Northern Ireland football team, which did so well in 1982 and 1986, had so many Catholic or nationalist players as well in the Northern Ireland team at the time. But boxing is very, very interesting because the people that you're talking about came from the areas which I think in many respects were worst affected by the Troubles, where people were more likely to get involved in the Troubles.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key figure in the book is called Jerry Story, who his gym is called the Holy Family, and that's in New Lodge, which is in the Republican part of Belfast. And yes, young men who lost family members, it was so easy for them to pick up a gun. And a lot of old boxers now have said that they were saved by boxing because instead of picking up a gun, they had an alternative way, which was boxing. And instead of the cliches about boxing, which do pertain that boxing instills discipline and hard work, respect, all those are valid. But what boxing did in Belfast is it opened its doors to both sides of the community. So you would have boxers on the Shanker Road coming into sort of the Falls Road and to New Lodge, Republican parts of Belfast, to work in those gyms. And they were allowed to do that. The gunmen sort of turned a blind eye.
Why? Because that is quite extraordinary when you think of what was going on at the time.
Yes, I think in terms of, well, they call them the gunmen, they would have an affinity with boxing because boxing is a violent activity. So they admired the hardness of boxing. And they sort of made exception. But of course, we had this guy, Jerry Story, who just is such an avuncular man, a charming man. And, you know, his family are steeped in Republican politics. And a lot of them were in jail for activities that they were involved in. He was choosing a peaceful path. And in 1972, soon after Bloody Sunday, he was asked to go to meet the Loyalist Army Council on the Shanker Road. They said, the boys want to meet you. And the way they said the boys, it made him understand these were the top guys. And they said, we'll send in an escort. He said, no, I will walk to the Shankar Road. He said, I don't want an escort. He was taken to this club, this loyalist club, by some minders who walked him up the stairs. There were 12 men waiting for him. They looked at him. He said, good evening, fellas. And they said, good evening. And they said, we know what you're doing. And he thought then it could go one of two ways. They might be actually so unhappy, the fact that he was taking his Catholic boxes onto the Shankar Road and taking boxes from the Shankill into the new lodge. But then they said, we like what you're doing and we want you to continue. And if anyone gets in your way, they will be dealt with severely, which was a euphemism for they will be killed. He said, no, I don't want anyone killed, but I accept your welcoming hand and, I will continue doing my work. And there were 3 assassination attempts on his life.
By who?
Because the leaders of, say, the UDA and the UVF and the RA had told their followers, do not touch this man because he's so important and we value what he's doing for our communities. But there were certain individuals who perhaps abhorred his peaceful path and went against the leader's views and attempted to bomb him. And all the assassination attempts happened in the docks, which...
where he worked.
Yes, where he worked. And, by the third attempt, he did go see the top UDA and UVF men and said, look, this is happening. They said, well, we have told our people not to touch you, but we will make sure. And there was never again after that another assassination attempt on his life.
Tell us about the fighters that he looked after from both sides of the political, religious divide.
Sure.
And how he managed to get them to work with each other. Because whatever about the way that he saw the potential for actually bringing people together, they still had to actually follow his example. How did he do that?
I think just once you went into his gym, you had to set aside any political allegiance you had and you had to show respect and decency to the other fighters, which sounds simple, but he obviously had such a magnetic way of instilling these lessons. And the best example I think I can give is he had 2 fighters, one called Davy Lama, who's in the book, who was a Protestant fighter on the Shankar Road. And his opponent as a professional was Hugh Russell, who became a famous photographer documenting the Troubles, who was a Catholic. And they had fought each other many times in the Holy Family, sparred together, they were friends. But as professionals, they fought 2 bloody battles. The first battle was in the Ulster Hall. And I was kind of mind blown that at the height of the Troubles, you could have a night of boxing where a Catholic is fighting a Protestant and supporters of both fighters come together, watch the fight. There's no animosity between the supporters, no violence. And yet this was a bloody battle, a bloody fight. And in the end, Davy Lama, who lost, he took Hugh Russell, the victor, to hospital with him because they both needed over 30 stitches. And together they're in the car after having this almighty epic fight, having a little chuckle at the absurdity of it. And their only concern was if the British Army stopped them. And they see 2 bloody guys together. Anyway, they get to hospital and the nurse takes them in to a ward and says, you 2 fellas better lie down. You've had a hard night. She pulls a curtain between them to give them some privacy. The doctor walks in a bit later and he sees Davy Lama. He says, oh my God, who did this to you? Davy pulls back the curtain and says, this fella here, but he's going to need more stitches than me, even though he won the fight. And for me, I loved it because it showed the violence of boxing and how savage it can be, but this unbelievable bond the fighters have.
Well, talking of bonds, one of the other stories which is really interesting is the time when Paddy Maguire, who was sparring with Davy Larmour at the Holy Family, his father died. And Davy Larmour decided to go to the funeral with a number of friends. Now, that was brave, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And Davy lived on the Shankar Road. And when he heard that Paddy's father had died and the service was going to be held, he said, I have to go see Paddy. And a number of other, I think 4 other boxers on the Shankill said, Davy, we're going to join you. So there were 5 of them in their suits walking along towards the Falls Road. And he said, in those days, 5 men walking together, it meant trouble. So you could see the housewives calling their kids in, and sort of doors closing because they thought that these were gunmen coming to cause havoc. And then in the distance, they could see the crowd of people who'd come to pay their respects to Paddy Maguire's father. And these people turned and saw these five men coming towards them. And again, there was this shiver of apprehension. And then Paddy Maguire said, "It's Davy Lama, it's the wee boxers." And there was a spontaneous just sort of joy and applause for these boxers walking towards them. So these were Protestant fighters coming into the Catholic Republican heartland. And again, just said movingly to me how powerful boxing is that it could do that, because there was nothing else where you could get that moment of reconciliation.
Tell us about Paddy's story's work, though, in the prisons as well. This is something that actually you've brought out in the book, which I think hasn't been well known to date.
Jerry Story's work in the prisons.
Yes.
When Bobby Sands and nine other Republican prisoners starved themselves to death in 1981, in the maze where they had died, there was desolation on both sides. So the UDA and UVF, even though they were in opposition, their prisoners were just feeling just a bit gloomy. There seemed to be no way out. This was going to be, they were in for life. And they decided, we need to get Jerry Story in to come teach us how to box. Yes, they're all, again, the cliche of discipline and nobility, all those things, but also just they wanted to get the goodness within him they felt would uplift their men. But at the same time, the Republican prisoners had gone to the governor of the maze and said, could you get Jerry Story in to come work with us? So he got the call to say, they want you in the maze. So he said, who wants me? And they said, both sides. And he said, well, that's good, because I would not go in and work only with one side. So on the Tuesday afternoon, he would go into the cages, as they called them, of the UDA and the UVF, teach them boxing, go back on a Thursday and teach the Republican guys boxing. And the most powerful thing of all is that the two cages, who men who at war with each other, started speaking to each other over the wall and saying, how's the boxing going? And they'd say, yeah, it's going okay. But, you know, the Republican guys, their equipment wasn't so good. So the UDA and UVF men offered their equipment to the Republican guys. So, and
it's, Donald, if this sort of stuff was in a movie, you'd always say it was too far-fetched. You can't make that sort of stuff up.
And Jerry Story told me this, but he kind of underplayed it. But when towards the end of the book, he said, you must meet some of the guys who were in the maze. And there's a guy called Billy Hutchinson, who's a well-known unionist politician.
Know Billy well, yes.
Yeah, and Billy said in the maze, you know, of course they knew that Jerry, his family was steeped in Republican politics, but they knew him and they welcomed him, they needed him. And he said, yes, this actually, when they came to the Good Friday Agreement, what they had learnt in the maze, that they'd started speaking to the Republican guys a little bit about boxing, actually helped a little bit with the negotiations even. So it's incredible what he did do. And, you know, they were slinging equipment over the cages so that they could share things. And yet, when they did get out, the bombing continued and the violence and the death continued. So boxing, I would not make any claims that boxing...
Yeah, but that's what makes it seem a bit strange, Donald, that if they could actually have that basic human interaction when they found something of common interest to them, yeah, that was boxing... that there wasn't this realization to try to develop it into something else. Or, well, when it did in the peace process, was still more than a decade later.
Yeah, and I think perhaps because the idea of losing face, in the maze, it was its own world. Once they were outside of the maze, of course, there was public perceptions, and perhaps, this is just me making a supposition here, they felt it would lose face if they were seen to be communicating with the other side.
What about then the involvement of Barry McGuigan? Because Barry McGuigan, for an awful lot of people, the White Doves, the peace movement. Yeah. Of course, Barry was from Clonus, which was south of the border.
Yeah.
Which was conveniently overlooked, I think, by a lot of people as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, he would say to me, I think his water bill was a Republic of Ireland water bill, and his telephone bill would be the north of Ireland. He was so on the border. But he worked at the Holy Family as well as a young amateur boxer. And he made it clear to me that in this book, I have to emphasize that the template for him, which he followed, that leave the fighting to McGuigan, he had supporters club on the Shankill and the Falls, both communities supported him. But the template for that had been laid down by Jerry Story, and which I think is not widely known. And he felt that was important that I emphasized that fact.
Is Jerry Story still alive?
He is. I spoke to him again this morning, just had his 83rd birthday, still obsessed with boxing. Tonight there'll be about 30 or 40 young kids who come into his gym. He's still working, still looking towards the next Olympics, if boxing is allowed in the next Olympics. So still continuing to do marvelous work. And he showed me a letter last time I was in Belfast where a judge, instead of handing down a custodial sentence to a young offender, he insisted that he goes to the Holy Family gym and boxes a couple of nights a week because this would hopefully set him on a better path.
I know you spent a lot of time with him for the book. I think something like 40 interviews for the book. Did he ever attempt, even with members of his own family, given that people like his nephew Bobby would be a very well-known IRA involvement, did he ever try and persuade them to stop what they were doing, or did he just literally just concentrate on the boxing and leave everything else unsaid?
He focused on just the positivity, because I would say, how can family members, an uncle and a nephew, take such divergent paths? Because they get on well. I think they both respect each other and their viewpoints. But he said, I would never attempt to change my nephew. That was his way of doing things. But clearly for Jerry, of course, he did not believe in violence. And his path was the antithesis to what many people were following in that time. But no, he never attempted to convert anyone. And I think that's possibly the key to his success, is because he did not attempt to change people. He just wanted to find the best within them, which sounds simple and naive. But I think that pure way of dealing with people actually enabled him to do significant, substantial work.
You were talking earlier, Donald McRae, about people's perceptions of boxing and cliches about it being a way to keep people out of trouble. Yeah. And sometimes it actually is. But there are other cliches that you get involving sports, such as keeping sport out of politics.
Yes.
Now, how do you feel about that? Because quite clearly, sport was kept out of politics in the sense that politics wasn't allowed to engage in what happened to boxing in Belfast. But yet at the same time, it did actually have a powerful influence.
It was deeply political. You know, they always would say there's no place or sectarian politics in boxing, which I understood. But their whole activity, I think, personally, is deeply political.
Yeah, it is in itself a deeply political statement, isn't it?
And I mean, people who say to me that sport and politics should be kept apart, I just don't believe that. But I think that's my past living in South Africa. The thing that politicized me was the international sports boycott, because suddenly I was hurt that our, in inverted commas, teams could not compete globally. And I'd say to my father, but why? And say, well, it's because of apartheid. And I said, well, what do you mean? And then he would explain, well, the way we are towards black people is not accepted by the outside world. And that made me think, well, actually. So it was sport that made me become more politically minded, I think.
And indeed, I think there's something that you've written before, that, I mean, even though your own teachers in school were racist, and yet they had this love of Muhammad Ali as a boxer.
I know. When Muhammad Ali fought George Foreman in 1974, I was 13 years old, and our teachers were, the male teachers were agog. Muhammad Ali is coming. And we sort of, in our little sort of quite nervous ways, would say, sir, he is black. And we had seen how their attitudes towards the black cleaners in our school was appalling. And they'd say, well, yes, he's not one of our blacks. So that made me think, actually, this is absolute nonsense, this society, white South African society. If you can exalt and see the fantastic abilities of Muhammad Ali, you need to open your eyes and see the abilities of local black South Africans.
Just as an aside, as you've mentioned, the issue of boycotts, how do you feel about sporting boycotts now? Because they were used very positively to try and force change in South Africa because of the apartheid nature of the system. But they've also been used as weapons and tools in things such as the Olympic Games in 1980, the ban because of the invasion by the Russians of Afghanistan, the response in 1984 when the Russians and the Eastern Bloc countries didn't turn up. People don't talk about things like, should people be going to the World Cup in Qatar in 2022? Mm. Should people have gone to Russia for the World Cup in 2018? I mean,
absolutely.
Where do you stand on the issue of boycotts, or should sport leave that aside?
I sometimes think that there is a place for boycotts, but money is so dominant in sport today that sort of what is happening in Russia or Qatar is just conveniently set aside because the billions of dollars that are involved in these competitions. I mean, I love sport, and of course I want to see the best sports teams and best sportsmen and women compete. But yeah, I do think the power of a boycott is enormous. And certainly, as I said, in a South African context, I think apartheid, I honestly think, would have lasted another 20 years if it hadn't been for the sports boycott.
And do you think, would we have seen peace in Northern Ireland if it hadn't been for the efforts of the likes of Gerry Story?
Well, I think he did a lot. Hard to say, but I think things are kind of tough at the moment and we need people like him. And often he would be asked, he was offered a lot of money to go work professionally as a boxing trainer in the States. And he always would say, well, what happened if all the good people left Belfast? And fortunately, he stayed. And I think he played a blinder and certainly eased the path towards some kind of tenuous peace.
In Sunshine or in Shadow, How Boxing Brought Hope in the Troubles is Donald McRae's new book. Donald, again, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on
TFM. It's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.